There's a wideness in God's mercy, like the wideness of the sea. That hymn we sang a few moments ago is one of my absolute favorites. The generous images and the sense of yearning in the tune move me every time we sing it. I feel it right here. And last year, when we all planned our funerals during Lent, that was the first song I wrote down. There's a kindness in God's justice that is more than liberty. Mercy and justice go together. They are two sides of a coin, God's currency. And there's a shorthand that I learned in Sunday school a long time ago about that. Justice is getting what we deserve, and mercy is not getting what we deserve. I can see how that makes sense in the context of a human judicial system, but is that what God's mercy is like? Is that God's mercy to have the word deserving in it, which is what stops me up short? Deserving or undeserving? What does that have to do with God's mercy? Our scripture readings today grapple with mercy, both human and divine. The story of Joseph's reconciliation with his brothers concludes our 11-week journey through the foundational stories of Genesis. Now, we followed the matriarchs and the patriarchs as they've listened to God's call and as they've ignored God's call, as they've married, had children, some struggled with infertility, as they fought with each other, as they've deceived each other, mourned each other, and loved and cared for each other. Last week, we heard of Jacob's favoritism of his son Joseph and how Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery out of jealousy and spite. Later, Joseph is imprisoned in Egypt, and he's only released when the Pharaoh learns of his ability to interpret dreams. Joseph then becomes Pharaoh's trusted overseer, and he rises to great power and wealth. And then a devastating famine comes over Egypt and all the surrounding countries. But thanks to Joseph, Egypt is well prepared. Joseph's family in Canaan, however, is not. And after 2 years of hunger, his brothers travel to Egypt to see the chief overseer so that they could buy some grain. And when they get there, they don't recognize the brother that they had left for dead. But Joseph recognizes them. And holding back tears, he treats them as strangers and tests them to see what kind of people they had become. Are they still the cruel, selfish men he remembers from his youth? It turns out that they've changed. They are humble, truthful, and devoted to their family. They are weighed down with remorse for harming Joseph and for the grief that it has caused their father Jacob. When Joseph sees all of this, something shifts in him. And whatever he might have planned to do before, he abandons revenge and makes peace with his brothers. We hear today how his pain pours out in loud weeping as he promises to take care of his family for the remaining 5 years of the famine. I marvel at Joseph's ability to choose mercy, but I don't think he gets there all on his own. I think it has something to do with the way that God's mercy has flowed throughout his life, transforming him from an arrogant, selfish young man into a compassionate and forgiving grown man. His mind and heart are changed. And when Joseph acknowledges this to his brothers, essentially saying, "It wasn't your actions, but God who made me who I am," he's moved. He's moved beyond categories of deserving and undeserving. He shows mercy to them in response to the mercy that he has experienced. Our second reading today is also about mercy, but it's a trickier one. Because while we're used to seeing people in the Bible exhibit prejudice and dismissiveness, it makes us a little uncomfortable when it's Jesus. Jesus encounters a Gentile woman from an occupied territory, the lowest of the low in Israel-centered culture. She begs him to cure her daughter. Jesus' disciples are annoyed and want to send her away, and Jesus agrees with them that his mission doesn't include her. But she pleads, kneeling, "Lord, help me." She is undeterred by Jesus' metaphor of children versus dogs, even though she knows full well that she and her daughter are the dogs. She reminds Jesus that dogs have a place at the master's table too. And then something happens. Jesus praises her faith, which shows up as courage and persistence, and he heals her daughter, despite the woman's undeserving status. I wonder how the disciples felt about that. Scholars and preachers have labored for centuries to interpret this story without casting Jesus in an unflattering light. Some say that Jesus intended to heal the child all along, but he first wanted to offer a living parable of prejudice converted to generosity. Others say that the word dogs is better translated as puppies, so Jesus is speaking more with affection rather than dismissiveness. But I'm okay with seeing the fully human Jesus, because for me, the crucial moment is when he changes his mind. Jesus changes his mind. Something shifts for him, and he no longer sees the Canaanite woman through the lens of ethnic, political, and religious labels. She is part of the family, and her daughter must be healed. I think it's significant that in Matthew's gospel, immediately after this encounter, Jesus travels back to the Galilee and goes up the mountain, and huge crowds bring people to him. They bring the lame and the blind and the maimed, the mute, and many others in need. And Jesus heals them all. And Matthew says, and the people praised God in amazement. There truly is a wideness in God's mercy. And it has nothing to do with who we are or how deserving we are. So what does this mean for us? In Seattle, in phase two of a pandemic, at a time of reckoning with our history of racism, and in an increasingly divided and combative civic scene. We may not have 5 years of famine ahead of us, but 5 months of social distancing with no end yet in sight is its own deprivation. Well, we might remember these fundamental stories. Joseph recognizes God's presence in his life and lets it transform him. Jesus listens deeply to a woman who is an outsider, and he understands his mission in an entirely new way. They change their minds, and when they do, they become conduits for God's mercy. That force of love and grace that brings new life out of suffering and death. And then we might remember our experiences of the wideness of God's mercy. Where has your mind been changed? And perhaps your heart too? Those are the foundational stories we also need to hear. Because we are always swimming in the wide sea of God's mercy. Can you feel it? It is holding us up, and it is sustaining us in this time, as always. And so we must ask, how do we need to change our minds to be conduits for healing and reconciliation?